Hi, I'm Barbara Gowdy, and I'm reading from my novel Helpless. I'm in my kitchen in my house, which overlooks a park where people walk their dogs. So you may hear a dog bark or you may not. This novel is set in the present day, but the section I'm going to read from is set in 1980, and it is about the main character, Ron, when he was a boy. His mother died on the morning of his 11th birthday. She was on her way home from the Dominion store with his chocolate ice cream cake when she stepped into the intersection against a red light and a car ran her down. At first, she seemed unhurt. Several witnesses described how she got right back up and said to the driver, "You'll be paying for that," referring, it was presumed, to the smashed cake. Then she fell again. He still can't believe it. Not so much that she died, but that only seconds away from her death, she mustered the nerve and presence of mind to lecture the driver. She'd been a shy woman, and by her own frustrated admission, a scatterbrain. The reason she'd called him Constantine, she'd said, was because it meant firm and unwavering, unlike her. Only she ever called him by his full name. Outside of the house, he was Con. And from a very early instinct not to draw attention to himself, he told people it was short for the more normal-sounding Conrad. He started going by the name Ron in his mid-twenties after buying Ron's appliance repair. For the sake of a single letter, he couldn't see changing all the sales receipts and invoices, let alone the neon sign. His father, who was still alive and had always called him Buddy anyway, said, "Your mother would have understood." Would she? In his dreams, the ones where she came back from the dead to finish the ironing or to wash the kitchen floor, she seemed sad and disappointed. "I'm no different," he'd tell her, and yet the truth was, and he had the experience of it every morning when he woke up, he felt different. He felt more himself, disguised by ordinariness. Ron, of Ron's appliance repair. She was buried in a church cemetery in the tiny southwestern Ontario town where she'd been born. A few days later, a group of women showed up at the house to ask his father if he'd like to donate any of her clothes to the crippled civilians. His father told them to take whatever they could find. "There isn't much," he apologized. Except for her winter boots and some boxes in the spare bedroom, he and Ron had already cleared out nearly everything. Her clothes and toiletries, her metal hair curlers that reminded Ron of a bunch of tiny carburetors, her scarves and gloves, and all her old purses with their residue of pennies and lint-coated chiclets. An antique toy dealer had bought the collection of stuffed monkeys, and a bookseller had carted off the books, though most of them were rippled and stained from her habit of reading in the bath. And now the church women. Once they were gone, the only thing left that had been hers alone was the black and white framed photograph, which Ron's father said Ron could keep in his bedroom. It was a photograph of a girl standing with her hands on her hips and her legs planted apart. Somebody had written Yvonne, 6 years, on the cardboard backing, but Ron's mother had always doubted it could be her. "I never stood like that in my life," she said. She thought that the girl was her sister, Doreen, who'd been the strong-willed, confident one. Whatever the case, it made no difference to Ron. For him, the keepsake was the Y-shaped crack in the glass from the time his mother accidentally knocked the photograph off the mantelpiece. Being forked, the crack represented not only her first initial, but also the warring emotions of protectiveness and exasperation that brought her most vividly to his mind. Not that he welcomed these emotions or was even able to name them. The thought of her was a barely lit fire that nobody, including his father, could be bothered to keep going. So it was up to Ron. Alone after school, he lay on the couch and visualized everything she would have done that particular day if she were still alive. He was faithful to her habit of starting one chore and then, a few minutes later, abandoning it for another. Sometimes he drew a chart to illustrate where the chores took her, from the kitchen to the backyard to the basement and so on. The tangled circuit he ended up with seemed eerily significant, as if he had copied down a message from an alien. He gave the charts names, Commander, Junior, Rochester, after his favorite vacuum cleaner models, and then he put them in an envelope labeled simply Mother. Meanwhile, as he was doing all this, he yelled out replies to questions he imagined her calling from another room. What? He'd yell. I'll be right there. He'd set a place for her at the table, but always whisked it away again before his father got home.